Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Automation Alley. It's homegrown, promoting business growth, entrepreneurism, talent development, international business. Cynthia Hutchison is with us. She is the Automation Alley Senior Director. Cynthia, thank you for being here. She's been responsible for business development, government affairs, marketing, facilities management, and more. Jack Van Team, Kelly Services, we thank you for being here. He's the Detroit Territory Vice President for Kelly Services with nearly three decades of experience in the human capital services industry, specializing in recruitment, executive search, talent acquisitions. Mary Corrado, President and CEO of the American Society of Employers. She surveys Michigan businesses, works with them, helps them with their issues, helps them get through their problems. She actually knows what is going on in the boardrooms of metropolitan Detroit and southeastern Michigan. She knows what discussions are going on today and what's going to happen because of that in the next 6 months to 12 months. When she was just 34, she became the first woman and first Hispanic to lead her 800-member organization. Mary, thank you for being here as well. And let me start by asking you to just give us a couple of words about American Society of Employers. It sounds like it's a big national company organization, but you're really homegrown here.
We are. So we were established as the Employers Association of Detroit in 1902. So we've been around for quite a long time. We changed our name in 1987 to the American Society of Employers, and that was intended to be more of a patriotic name change, not a coast-to-coast name change. We currently have just under 800 employers. About 650 of them are in southeastern Michigan. So these are the companies that you passed on your way here. These are the companies that you hear about. And then we also have a large group of small to mid-sized companies as well.
And Jack, what's going on with all of these companies? What do you see happening today as you are on the front line of this new era of job growth?
Well, everybody's trying to solve the same problem. Having the right talent at the right time, being able to keep up with the skills that are necessary to compete, not only in the local economy, but in the global economy. And to that end, they really have to look at their existing workforces and figure out how to skill them, reskill them, and upskill them to remain competitive.
All right, and how do we align ourselves with that? We'll get into that as the discussion continues today. Cynthia, talk about what you have seen from the very dark days of manufacturing until this boom area right now.
In 2008, 9, and 10, and everybody in this room is well aware, we lost an awful lot of manufacturing jobs in Michigan. But one of the exciting things we did was we managed to retain our prowess, our manufacturing prowess, to become the leading manufacturing skill set in the nation. And we know that at Automation Alley, we feel strongly that we've already got the foundation to become a great leader in the future. And by overlaying the new technologies onto manufacturing, we feel we're poised to take advantage of this industry for revolution and all the changes coming from manufacturing right now.
And it's continuing to grow.
It's continuing to grow. The opportunities are out there.
All right, so the opportunities are out there. Number one, what kinds of new opportunities are we seeing? And I open this up to anybody who wants to speak to it. We keep hearing that there's all kinds of job growth, that there are new developments going on within companies. What is actually happening out there that we haven't seen before?
There's a lot in terms of data. So Jack talked about upskilling. If you don't have a background in data, that's what you want to focus on. So data scientists, data analysts, data statisticians, data architects, data. So that's a hot area right now, and we don't see that that's going to go away.
As Mary referenced, we have more data than ever, and we know less about what to do with it. So we have data, and everybody knows they need it, so we're collecting it maniacally and gathering data. We need people who are talented enough to decide what to do with that data and how to funnel it into more efficient operations.
Yeah, from a technology standpoint, in addition to big data, there's cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, robotics. I don't believe we're ever going to have enough software engineers and UX engineers out there, people that perform digital marketing is tremendously huge. And that's in addition to the largest industries that we have here in Detroit. They're all growing. Construction's growing. Logistics is growing. Healthcare is growing. Manufacturing is absolutely still growing, even though it's so large and we don't tend to think that it's growing. It's still growing.
Nursing, registered nurses, 255,000 will be needed in the next 5 years, according to some studies. You mentioned software developers, applications, 144,000 will be needed. Accountants, auditors, 90,000 needed in the next 5 years. And market research analysts, marketing specialists, 85,000 needed. These are all areas that are growing, but there also are going to be support jobs with them. You may not have to be a tech to work in a tech company.
That's probably one of the most exciting things, and I think we've all had a chance to see it. I'm sure Jack and Mary have. We've seen things where a technician now, the technician's in Birmingham, Michigan, and the technical problem is in Texas. And the gentleman in Texas simply puts on glasses that are smart glasses that are telling him the problem and identifying what he's seeing. That's being picked up by the technician with the expertise in Birmingham, Michigan, who's telling that individual which knobs to turn, what to do next, and basically dropping instructions in front of his line of sight. So those glasses that you see people wear actually are really smart glasses. And they're sharing information, enabling people who might not have been able to be at that level of the employment industry to move up a level and maybe bring in people who are disenfranchised or have been out of the workforce for a long time to have exciting new opportunities with higher level skill sets.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jack.
I was just going to say that to your question about the other jobs that are growing that might not be as technical, you know, when more people are going to work, you need more human resources folks. When there's a lot of construction going on, you need more people that are purchasing folks, cost estimators, all that type of stuff. So there's all the tangential jobs out there that are growing as well with a great economy.
So everybody can be included. This is an era right now where everybody can be included in some way in all of this new job growth. And then the question is, well, what are employees really looking for? What are employers really looking for? What do I have to have as a potential job candidate here and a potential employer in order to really get into these companies?
Well, I can take that one. So our employers, and again, as I mentioned, those 800 employers represent about 600,000 employees in Michigan. So we're getting some real good data from them. And employers are looking for certain skill sets that, you know, there's an assumption that employees coming in already have the communication skills. They already know how to work well with others. They've got presentation skills. Now companies are looking for critical thinking skills and associational thinking skills, putting patterns together. They're looking for emotional intelligence, which is something that we haven't really heard of in the past. But, you know, how does one understand one's emotions and the other person's emotions as well? And they're looking for leadership and those leadership and teamwork skills. So that's what our members are telling us is what's important to them right now.
And Jack, you were saying that you really have to determine when you apply for a job, when you desire to work at a company, what the end product is going to be. Not necessarily what am I going to do when I get there, but what about the end product?
Yeah, we encourage people that are about to enter the job market to really think about what type of situation they want to put themselves in, what they want to actually be doing versus what the job title is, what kind of skills do they want to gain by working in that job that's going to further their career. If they really understand where they want to be, they can now understand what they're going to do along the way to continually pick up skills. So we always recommend to folks to have a learning style and a lifelong learning attitude and look for companies that align with that. If you're good at what you do and you have the skills that Mary talked about, which is absolutely bang on to what employers are looking for, and you want to learn, that's a tough combination to beat.
And so we're talking about a culture here, and Cynthia, I know Automation Alley looks at a culture and thinks the culture has to be right and the skills will come along. Is that correct?
Yes, some amount of skills need to exist, and those basic skills that Mary talked about, the emotional intelligence, the social interaction, really the basics, the respect for employers and respect for your colleagues, being on time for work, those are very fundamental basics. But there's a cultural fit that when somebody fits your culture, if there's a nuance in technology and some additional skills, you can upskill the person's unique talent levels, which you really have a hard time upskilling, is their acceptance of culture. And Jack alluded to the culture of learning. We talk about lifetime learning all the time now. If I had kids in high school, I'd make sure that they were continually desiring learning. And when you're 30, you need to want to keep learning. When you're 40, you want to keep learning, because none of us are going to stop. Our jobs are going to change every day, every month, every year. And for those who want to accomplish their four-year degree or two-year degree and be done learning, I think that's the biggest risk we have. So the flip side of that is, I'm not done learning and I'm never going to be done learning, and that person is a great asset to any company, but they need to be culturally a good fit.
And a lot of the employers are helping with that process. So one of the services that we offer is training and development, and we're seeing huge numbers of people coming in sent by their employer to learn certain skill sets, whether it's communication or decision making or presentation skills or different types of compliance training. But our professional and career development is something that employers are offering now to employees because they need it and the employees are looking for it.
Just to be clear, so it's presented by your organization, ASE, but companies can pay to send their employees there so that they can get these skills that they need?
Correct. So we have a training catalog, and our members go through that catalog, identify different training classes that would be appropriate for different individuals in their organization. They send them to our location, or we go to their location, depending on how many people they need trained.
We have just heard in the last 5 minutes the phrase emotional intelligence twice. So I looked in my notes here, and sure enough, I quoted your organization, ASE, back in February of this year, emotional intelligence, looking for people with the ability to focus on the positive. They can be kind, but also have to be able to assert themselves when appropriate, and they have to be able to manage workplace conflicts, all part of emotional intelligence.
That's correct. And in the past, you haven't been able to really test for somebody with emotional intelligence. Now there are actually tests out there in the interviewing process that you can take as a prospective employee, or your employer can give you, and it'll tell you if you're emotionally intelligent or not. So this is an area that we're going to see more of. Some of you might have seen, I think it was last week in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article that companies are looking for leaders that are humble. And how have we ever heard that before? Leaders that are humble? So this was very interesting to me. And again, it goes to that emotional intelligence. It goes to empathy and being able to empathize. All of those are important skill sets that we didn't really talk about in the past. And now we're seeing much more conversation about that.
That's not a test you can study for.
No.
You either have it or you don't have it.
But you can learn it. So if you don't have emotional intelligence, you can learn it. There are books out there on, there's training classes on that. So it is something that you can come up to speed with. But I'm sure all of us know people that have no emotional intelligence. They might be extremely high on the IQ side, but emotional intelligence they need a little help with. So there is an opportunity, and you can read up on it, and it's an interesting field of study, too.
All right, so that's a skill that we all need to have. Anybody have questions? Just raise your hand. If you do, we'll get a microphone to you, questions or comments. And as you think of that, I thought we had one over there. Okay, let's talk about the resume. Let's talk about applying for the job. The resume is a different animal than it used to be. some of the statistics that we've been talking about on the air this week. If your resume is longer than a page, you might want to shorten it. But Jack, you say it depends on the industry as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The resume is not evolving as fast as it needs to, except in enlightened companies. And enlightened companies are really posting outcomes of positions out there. So this is the output of the job that I need, instead of a classic job description that's out there. So if you post a job that way and you send your resume in to that type of a job, you're not going to get much of a response. You have to tailor your response to a job posting like that with your relevant skills that show the outcomes that you've had in previous jobs and show the progression that you've had with outcomes of positions. The sad fact is that a resume gets reviewed by a talent acquisition person, a recruiter, a headhunter, about 5 or 6 seconds is the first pass of a resume. They're scanning for keywords because that's how job descriptions are written, and that's about it. So they got a whether it's a virtual pile or a soft pile or hard copy, 5 or 6 seconds, and it's going over there, and then they're doing their vetting over here, and they're taking those, and then they'll do a deeper dive. But if you don't make an impact in 5 or 6 seconds with a traditional resume, you're not getting looked at.
So is that a machine that does that? Or do you do it with the naked eye? Do you actually scan for 5 seconds or 6 seconds and determine if you want me or not?
Yeah, so that data is certainly a human looking at it. But there is OCR that everybody uses, where there's Boolean searches get written, resumes get scanned, and then queued in for a recruiter to look at. But that 5 or 6 seconds is a human.
So the trick is that you really have to make each one, as we've always said, company specific, but so company specific that you look at the job classification, the job pitch that the company is putting out there, and actually use the very words from that.
Yeah, you got to be authentic about it, obviously. But the match of an employer and an employee is talking about aligning expectations. So an employer has an expectation of a position that they put out there, and an employee has an expectation of the job that they take. So you have to really focus both as an employer and as an employee to how am I going to best get the expectations aligned with each other? Because if you don't, you have a short-term situation.
The cover letter is also important, and that's where you can kind of personalize it a little bit more. So we recommend to job seekers that make sure your cover letter hits on your skill sets and make sure those are consistent with what the job is that you're applying for.
We have a question over here, but before, and one over here too. But before we get to that, I have been told by certain people in the field that the first thing they don't want to see is that I would be great working for your company. Obviously, that's why you're applying. Is that correct? I mean, if you see, I know I'd be an asset to your company, is that like, come on, this is not good?
They're all buzzwords, right? So we want something unique. I want to know, if I'm hiring someone, I want to know why my future is going to be better without you or with you than without you.
All right, we'll get into some of the terms that you might want to use in a couple of minutes, but first we have our first question over here and then the next one coming from over there. Yeah.
Good morning. I have a question for the panel. Seems that we have a paradigm shift here. Before, corporations expected you to come in with soft skills, and they would help you advance your training by maybe covering a master's degree. Nowadays, they won't do that, but they'll help you train for the soft skills. Do you think that's short-sighted on their behalf?
Well, as we progress, and technology is so ingrained in the bulk of the positions that that many of the companies have, they're really looking for the trade schools, the community colleges, the universities to train on those harder skills, and that's what they're counting on. So what gets left out, if somebody doesn't take a liberal arts curriculum as part of their electives, they're coming out short on that side. So that's what's left. That's the unmet need from an education standpoint. But I agree with your premise that it's the opposite.
There's also, the state of Michigan has about $42 million in the next year that they're going to be giving to employers to train on the technical skills. So there is that opportunity for employers to apply for this aid from the state, which will help upskill, and they're all technical skills. They're not using these dollars for soft skills.
A question here, and then we're getting that mic over there, and then we're coming back. Yeah.
It's quite common to have a video resume for people in the arts, but how do you see a lot of that coming in from engineers? In other words, I'm showing my project on the assembly line. This particular widget I made is improving the performance on this engine, and just showing that visually, is that coming in yet or not? They haven't advanced to that?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what Mary's talking about, something different. If you send a video snippet of a product of your efforts, of your work, of your training, of your education, that's going to get a really long look.
It definitely will have an impact, but it has to be good, too.
And it showcases what Mary's referenced a couple of times, that even presentation skills, because that's an area a lot of people are lacking in, and a lot of companies really, really want somebody that they can put out there and can represent their organization well.
Are there any keywords that cross all functions?
Could you ask that again?
Are there any keywords that cross all functions?
That cross all functions?
Yeah.
Well, so there are certainly several when you're talking about the soft skills. You know, we're looking for collaboration, but we're looking for evidence of collaboration. We're looking for a person's ability to take work and make a work product out of that. I'm trying to think of what the other ones would be.
There's one of the concepts that we had touched on before, and that's the ability to show results, not necessarily the duties. And as we talk about that, Jack, you know, you could say maybe you exceeded budget or surpassed objectives or...
You know, when you get that interview, so we've talked about the resume a little bit, when you get that interview, and whether it's through a video that you've shared or through a great cover letter, whatever it might be, the interview process, the recruiters are very skilled. They're going to be asking you to describe situations. So you want to be prepared for that. So describe a situation where you solved a problem. Walk me through that from start to finish. You know, describe what your teammates, how they would describe you. What would your subordinates say about you? So all of those types of questions will be asked during an interview, and that's where you can really, you know, you're not going to necessarily use buzzwords. You're going to talk about your own experience in terms of how you solved a problem.
Thank you.
Oh, that was it? Oh, that's good. That's great. That's great. One thing that I wanted to mention on the resumes, because of the new way that we're screening resumes, tiny font is probably not a good thing to do, right? You got to catch. I want to catch your eye in the first 5 seconds. This question has taken longer than you will examine a resume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be organized very clear, very clean, so that you can read it and pick things up. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anything under a 12, certainly not an 11 font on a resume.
Let me throw something out here. Do you agree with something that was published nationally from a job pro that the algorithms that you have to try to turn the information on your resume into usable data for them? And a lot of people don't understand how that works. Now, I have actually seen companies hire professionals to help them with their social media posts and their online posts so it can get them a higher level. It can get them up higher so that people will see them first. Travel agencies and travel concerns do this all the time, so when you hit somebody's hotel, something else will pop up. But when we're talking about the resumes here, you have to make sure that the to use a traditional text-based format, does that work today, or do we need a new kind of format? Do we need some kind of new way of presenting that information so the machines can read it and grab onto words and push it farther ahead?
So the So the robotic process automation that's been put into play relative to reading text started where the text was at. So I don't know that we need anything new to be able to pick it up, but I would highly encourage someone that's writing a resume for a particular job to really understand what the job is requiring and then highlight those skills in the resume, in the cover letter that you're putting out. The machines are incredibly smart and pick those up very, very easily. I mean, the technology's been around for 25 years. It just keeps getting better and better every year.
And I want to throw something else out there in terms of, we talked about, you know, they're seeing a resume just for a couple of seconds. And so what do you have to do that is a little different? And some of that is looking at your community of who you know and going out to those people that you know. I had an example just this week where my cousin is applying for a position up in Grand Traverse, and I'm on a selection committee down here for the Y of the USA, the Metro Y here, and he's applying for the Y CEO position up in Grand Traverse. We're using the same Y of the USA consultants to help us. So he was just having a conversation with me saying, you know, Mary, you know, I'm applying for this position. And so I reached out to the person that I'm talking with and just said, hey, just as a FYI, my cousin, it's a small world, my cousin is applying for that position up there. So my point is, you never know who you know that might be, you know, working on something. So you want to make sure your network is expanded. Use LinkedIn if you're not using LinkedIn. That's a real real good tool for you, a good resource. But really know and get the word out. So you never know who knows someone else who knows. And that will at least move your resume to the top of the pile and possibly get you that interview.
I've had similar experiences, and what Mary just alluded to is probably, in my opinion, the single most important thing we can tell people, because you all have networks. Every single person who's out there has a network, and you know somebody who knows somebody. And I have a stepson who's an IT major, and you know, when you're in your last year of IT, you should be on the home stretch, and it should be easy. And he got his job through me, because I knew somebody who was looking for somebody. So it's unfortunate, but he's a hard worker. He sent out 100 resumes a week for 8 weeks, and he didn't get any responses. So, you know, I looked at his resume, we looked for buzzwords, and you almost begin to game the system if you're not careful, trying to find the exact words for him to say to get into the job that he may or may not like, where they may or may not like him. I talked to somebody I knew who was hiring and wanted a young, energetic, hardworking IT person. I got that. But the fact that he needed me, and at one level, kind of made me feel bad, because not everybody knows somebody who knows that opening exists. But with the extension of things like LinkedIn, we do know people who know people, and everyone in this room has some ability to use their tentacles to go out and reach into others.
I will also say that you know, WWJ and LTU have been partnering for many years, and there are so many people who have used this format and this event to network and actually get jobs. And I've had people call me from this audience over the years and say, you know, I went there and I met somebody, or I saw somebody on the panel, started talking to them, and boom, I'm going to go to work for them. And that's happened several times. So the point here again is, the networks begin wherever you are. The people next to you, the people in front of you, the people at the bank, all can be a network. We have somebody, a question in the back. Yes, Bruce.
Thank you. I work here at Lawrence Tech, and I have perhaps a selfish question for Mary. A number of years ago, your organization published a study of area employers, and one of the questions asked was there a preferred collegiate background or college that your new employees came from. Lawrence Tech happened to track very highly in that. We wondered, is that a survey that you do frequently, and if there are any more current results available?
Yeah, so what you're referring to is our starting salaries for recent college graduate survey. We do that every year. In fact, we'll be sending out the questionnaire here shortly. But we ask our members a whole host of questions, and it's for college co-ops as well as individuals that are just graduating from a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. We ask about starting pays so we know what employers are paying for those positions. We ask about if there's a premium given to certain schools. If they're recruiting at different schools, we ask about GPA and how many employers are looking at GPA. And I guess my comment would be that there is premium given to certain schools, and your technology schools right now are hot. So Lawrence Tech falls there, Kettering falls there. So we're seeing a lot of premium. Obviously, U of M, Michigan State will get some as well. But your small to mid-sized employers aren't necessarily looking for specific schools to recruit from. And again, we're looking, the employers are looking for, GPA is important, but they're also looking for those other skill sets and teamwork and communication and professional image and, you know, business acumen, all of those as well. But we do that survey annually, and I think we may have done a segment on that in the past, on the starting salaries. When people ask me if they've got kids in school, I'll say software engineering, they're going to get the highest pay right now. And if they happen to go to a technical school, they're going to get a premium for that.
And she and her organization are nice enough to share that information with us. I said there would not be another commercial. There's a little one here. And we get it on the air as soon as you do. So we do that so that people know what's hot out there and when, where the best places to go and the best places to go for a good salary after you get out. We have another question in the back. Yes.
Yeah, hi. Terry Beltran, Beltran Media. I have a question for Mary. I know that pretty soon we don't know what's going to happen or not, but marijuana might be legalized as recreational use. I see in your website you do drug screening. How, as employers, is that going to be handled?
There will be a day when there will be no drug screening. No.
Right, and I will say that more and more employers in this market today are not screening for marijuana because they wouldn't find any workers. You know, and I say that, but that's honestly the case. They've had to pull back. I mean, they're screening for other types of drugs, but marijuana isn't one that they're screening for because it is a job seeker's market. You're trying all areas to find workers, and that drug screen on the marijuana might not raise as high of a red flag as maybe in the past it did. But you know, that will, it'll be interesting to see what happens with employers and how they're going to assimilate that into the workforce. I just saw a story this week about, or it might have even been this morning, about drivers, and there's been a 6% increase in states that have legalized marijuana in terms of highway traffic accidents. So are they making a correlation? You know, the story was trying to make that correlation. I don't know if there is one. So we're going to see lots of different things happen. So we're watching it and asking our employers, but I do know that fewer and fewer employers are screening for marijuana.
I think that study also, by the way, was the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Because I saw that, and it's topical here in Michigan because it's going to be on the ballot. We have a question in the back. Yes.
Hi, my name is David. Is there an advantage in uploading your resume in LinkedIn? The reason I ask is because if you have to tweak it to suit certain other jobs you'll be applying, then the recruiter will already have seen what you uploaded. So what do you advise?
So I think the best way to leverage LinkedIn and like platforms is to upload a profile of what your experiences are. And if you go back to the old newspapers, it was Situation Wanted is what it was called way back. I don't even know if they do the advertise like that anymore. But you want to describe what your skills are and what you want to do. So I wouldn't necessarily put my resume up there, but I would certainly put a profile up there. And then you want to, if you are looking, you want to change a few of the things that are searchable in your profile to make people aware that you're in the market. And then, as Mary and Cynthia both said, your personal network, light that up as quickly as possible. Engage everybody that you come across in conversations about that. You know, make sure your professional or networks as well know that you're in the market.
Of course, you really don't want to tell too much because you don't need all that information out there, but it is good, and each one of you have told me as we've talked before, that it is good to let companies and employers and prospective employers know what you can do, because you never know what opportunities may be at a company, and that many jobs are actually created for the person. Person comes in for an interview, and they say, yeah, they interviewed for this job, but boy, we could use that person here and there and the other place. And I saw a study one time, and I find it very hard to believe that most jobs are actually filled that way. However, hiring managers have said, no, I believe that. Comments?
Well, I think we've talked a lot, and I know we have an audience of more job seekers than employers, but we talk a lot about the responsibility of the applicant or the current employer to improve their own position. One of the things that Jack and I have talked about offline is the opportunities now for employers to maybe adjust the way they look for people, and that's something I think will transform the industry a great deal. And with the unemployment so low, this is our best opportunity to encourage the employers to be a little bit more flexible about the kinds of people who are coming in and make more of those decisions. You alluded to, Murray, the decisions that are, you're the right person, I don't have the opening right now, but I'm 100% sure I want you to be part of my corporation, so let me find a way to slide you in a maybe a less pay, a lower paying job that you elevate, something that brings that person in so you have the right fit, back to that cultural fit, the right person in your organization who is willing to be a lifetime learner. So you've got them already on board philosophically that they want to grow with you. And that's the kind of obligation I would like to see a little more effort from the employers to make sure that we're opening opportunities for new people.
I think one of the things, and I think this is where Murray was going with this, is as you're being interviewed for a position at a company, they're also looking at your attitude and your aptitude. And if you have those two things, along with the skills that Mary has highlighted so well, they know they can get you the skills that you need to do the jobs that they have inside their company. So attitude and aptitude is way high on the list these days.
And Mary, you had a situation where there was somebody who was involved with employee surveys in your company, in your organization, and you didn't realize they had other skills. And they were easily adaptable to something that the person would rather do, if I'm not mistaken?
Right. So ASC is pretty small. There's only about 26 full-time regular employees. Then we have a field staff of another group. So we all wear many hats at ASC. But I had a gentleman that came to work for us, and he was hired to do employee satisfaction surveys. That's what they were called then. Now they're more well-known as employee engagement surveys. But we hired him for that. And then we had an opening in our newsletter. We used to do a print newsletter, and now we do an online newsletter. And I remembered that this gentleman was a high school English teacher. And I said to him, I'm like, Joe, I really think that this would be good for you. And it didn't even cross his mind that this would be a position he was interested in. So we moved him over, and this was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and he retired recently. And he said, Mary, I never knew that I could have a job that I actually loved, it wasn't even on my radar. So it's, again, it's the responsibility of the employer, too, to understand what the skill sets are of their employee base. And make sure that when there are openings, they look within as well.
Good point there. When people are applying for work, and when people are, I mean, at what point do you come out and say, maybe I would rather do this, or maybe I would rather do that, once you get in? I mean, if they're saying, well, tell me about yourself, and you know you've applied for a job doing this, but you're talking about something like this, and they start leading you along those lines. Is that an entree to maybe go in a different direction with them that is a positive situation?
These two do a lot more hiring and have a lot more interface with that, but I would tell you, anytime I see excitement and enthusiasm, I try to figure out a way to find that person the role, because I think that that level of enthusiasm and interest will ensure success. But with small organizations, if you don't have an opportunity, you can't do much with it. So I'm going to let the professionals who hire every day talk to that.
When somebody sits down there, make it more clear. When somebody sits down there at an interview, what are the barriers? What are the borders there?
And we do ask that question, and then file it in our memory. I think it really depends on the size of company that you're at too, because if you're at a larger company, you have a much more ability to move around in that company. I said with my company with 26 people, it's not as easy to find opportunities with people, so it can get a little frustrating. I recently had an employee that, after being with us for a year, and we hired her for a very specific purpose, she was with us for a year, and then she started saying that that's not what she wanted to do anymore, and could is there's another opportunity for her, and we didn't have that other opportunity because, again, we're so small. So we helped transition her out of the organization with another employer where she could use those skill sets. From my standpoint, I was hoping I'd have her for a couple more years than a year. We put a lot of energy into the hiring and recruiting process, so it was a little disappointing. So my personal bias would be, wait more than a year before you say that you're really not interested in doing that anymore.
And don't get in there and use that job for the next one. Question from Rick.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, panel. A lot of good discussion here. When you're talking about LinkedIn, though, and regular resumes, what do you prefer for your automated systems? To just have somebody upload a resume from LinkedIn, or to send something that's pre-formatted that gets kind of, if you upload it through some of the systems, it gets reformatted?
Yeah, it's the simpler the better. If you're going to apply to a broad range of opportunities, so a simple Microsoft Word document is best for those types of things. I would not try to upload your LinkedIn profile into a system like that, because I have no idea what that would look like on the other side, but I'm sure it's not good.
Jack, if you could, we have another question right there. Yes.
Hi, my name is Chris, and my question regards the older worker, those of us who are 60 plus, lots of experience, lots of skills. I have come across, there seems to be a reluctance to want to hire you because they can hire three millennials, even though you can do that work very well and you'll be there and dedicated and loyal. What are recommendations for the older worker?
My immediate response would be keep trying, because the industries that are growing need folks that have the kind of skills that you're describing. Maybe not every employer is as enlightened as they need to be about what people with incredible amounts of experience can bring. So I would keep trying. I would do your inquiries both in your professional and personal networks to companies that have typically hired folks that have had a vast amount of experience. So just keep at it.
I would agree with that. I think employers have to look at different areas that maybe they haven't looked at in the past in recruiting, whether it's an older workforce or whether it's a retired, retirees that are looking to get back in the workforce. And it's some other non-traditional employee populations. Employers just need workers. I mean, it's very difficult. They're turning away work right now because they don't have the workers to perform the jobs that they may get. So again, I agree with Jack. I'd keep on trying, because employers are going to have to be hiring wherever they can find workers.
And I'll respond to that. As much as ASC and Kelly Services and LTU would like all of us to drop a bucket of 18-year-olds in here who are all primed and ready to go into software engineering, we can't do that. So since that option is no longer available to us, I think one of the things that we work with at Automation Alley is making sure our employers understand that there are a lot of single certifications that make a difference. Mary alluded earlier to big data and data analytics. That one single certification might be what it takes to make you stand out now in LinkedIn or in a resume. So if you can look for the area that's most interesting to you that has a couple tweaks you could add, that also gives you an advantage. But I think retraining our existing workforce and retraining the older workforce is a critical component of how we're going to move our region along and have our employment stay high with the right levels of talent.
And on the subject of training and retraining, Jack, I know the people at Kelly Services are very excited about a relationship you have with Kenzie Academy out of Indianapolis, I think it is, Indiana, and it could be coming here as well.
Well, we certainly hope it is. So the Kenzie Academy has developed a methodology for identifying attitude and aptitude of individuals for specific course curriculums that they've developed, which are an alternative to college. So I don't know that I should be mentioning that here at Lawrence Tech. But they test the folks for that, and they posit that if you have the correct aptitude and you have the correct attitude, you can get through their program and in a very short amount of time. So what they do is they put people through college-type curriculum for the first year. They put them on-site with a company for a year, and they're supporting their learning for that second year. And when they're done with the 2 years, they roll out and they become an employee of that company. So it's a tremendous option for folks, and it doesn't matter how old you are. If you have that attitude and aptitude, you can, and it's for software engineering, it's for digital marketing, it's for the combination of design and engineering, you know, UX engineers.
And where do you get the individuals from?
So they come almost literally from everywhere. They're working with people that may not have made it at the university level, may not have made it at a community college level, have a trade school certification, that want more. They're working directly with employers about what to do with their workforce that they need to be upskilled. So the people can come from everywhere.
And as you said, age may not be a barrier.
It absolutely is not. The class that they have right now has 18-year-olds, and I think the oldest person in the class is 53.
Nice. Yeah. Let's go back to the other end of the age spectrum, to kindergarten. And one of the things, Cynthia, that Automation Alley has looked at is the fact that 65% of kindergartens today, people entering school, kids, will have a job that doesn't exist today?
Yes. So as we talk about things you want your children to prepare for, things we want to prepare for, we did research about a year ago, Automation Alley, with some collaboration with our academic partners, including LTU. And one of the things that we discovered in that is that 65% of kindergartners today will be working in jobs that have yet to exist. So when you think about the magnitude, that's why we talk about the lifetime learning is the single most thing you can have as an adaptable employee, is the magnitude of change that you can't sit back and say to your kindergartner, you know, they can still be a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, a teacher, a firefighter. Maybe not, you know, it's all going to look so different. So as we face that reality, I think the number one thing we can all prepare for at any age is the adaptability that's a necessity to thrive in the future.
And I love one of the lines that you had was that we're all, I wrote it down so I get it right, we are all just a Google search away from our next opportunity.
Yes, we are.
That line. I'm going to use that on
well,
the air.
That's
another commercial.
Even for training, you know, we look at that for training, and there's historically, I mean, certainly back when I was in high school, and I don't want to date myself that much, but historically, you know, you knew about a couple different ways to get a job, and there were ways, certain ways to get jobs and certain ways to get an education. They were fairly limited, but now you can Google. You know, Mary can give you, at the end of the class today, at the end of the session today, you can ask Mary for the hottest job title that involves data analytics. You can Google that, and you can go online and take a free course that might not get you a lot. You can take a course for $99 that gets you a little bit more, and you can start to move up the ladder that easily. It's very accessible to us.
Mary, would that be software? as you mentioned before?
I'm going to go back to data. You know, data analyst, data scientist, data statistician, data architect. All those positions, if you Google those, you're going to see a wealth. And, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, those things as well.
The keyword data. Just a couple of comments, if you would, on something that's been in the news a lot, because every month when the Bureau of Labor Statistics comes, the statistics comes out with its analysis of what's happened in the past month, we see that wages are stagnant or just rising a little bit. Do you see that changing here in metropolitan Detroit?
I do, but I don't have the deep analysis on it that these two do, so I'll just say what I'm seeing in Automation Alley, because we're looking at these new ways of training and new ways of learning and ways to take people who are in very entry-level positions and rather rapidly upskill them. If they have the ability to move up with that, they have the ability to almost reinvent the middle class that we've seen kind of falling out of our region. But statistically, Jack and Mary will have more answers.
Yeah, I think you have to take that conversation in wage bands, because there is certainly tremendous wage growth in certain bands, and those are typically on the higher end. There has been slower than expected wage growth down in the lower bands, and I think they're being artificially held down there, and they have to explode soon. You know, you have a disruptor in all across the United States. Now we have this disruptor here in Metro Detroit called Amazon. You know, Amazon's going to $15 an hour, a lot of benefits day one, and they're competing with a lot of the production support and assembly people that are making $10 an hour. So we know anecdotal stories where people are working a 40 or 50 hour a week job making $10, $11, $12 an hour, and they're going to Amazon on the weekends making $15. So that is certainly going to push things down.
So Amazon is actually going to help raise wages in many industries here, but also
begrudgingly, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if wages don't go up, are there perks involved that could compensate for that?
Yeah, so to comment on the wage growth, we're not seeing it move as quickly as you might expect it to move. We are seeing wage growth in the technology positions, so you're seeing a lot of wage growth there, engineering positions as well. But employers are really pressured today. Employees are coming to them. They may have three offers when they sit down and get an offer from the new employer, and you know, salary and benefits continue to top the list. So you know, employers need to make sure they're competitive with their benefits package as well as their salaries. But you know, there are other non-salary type of things that you can do to make it a good environment for your workforce. We've seen a relaxed dress code coming back. We've seen telecommuting that's been out there for a while, but a lot of employers have been hesitant to go that route, and now they're being forced to go that route, especially with the younger population. We're seeing employee discounts. We're seeing sign-on bonuses. So all of those things are playing into what employers have to do to recruit and retain their talent.
Time for one more question from anybody. Anybody have one more question? Let me just ask you all for just a final thought on the new era of jobs and the way we get them.
I think as we watched industrial revolutions wash over our globe for the last many years, we look at it each single time we've had a big technological advance. It's improved employment, and we are expecting this one to be one that lifts things in Detroit and Metro Detroit and Michigan.
So the data's out there, your word. 800,000 jobs, job openings right here over the next 6 years. That shows, you know, tremendous opportunity for all of us. And what I would say for a job seeker is take control of yourself and your career and what you want to do, and focus on attitude, aptitude, learning, and go find that cultural fit. You heard an example here where Mary had a great employee and was only able to keep her for a year. And it was because the expectations were a little misaligned. And for long term, you have to keep those expectations aligned.
That 800,000 number, is that for southeastern Michigan?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Thank you.
I would say my advice to a job seeker would be target your position search to skill sets that you're passionate about with companies that you admire. So don't do a wide casting. Just don't send your resume out to 1,000 different employers and hope that it might work. You know, really look for organizations that have positions that you have good skill sets for, and then look for within those positions what companies are companies that you admire and you want to go work for.
And with that, 9 out of 10 workers, 22 to 37 years old, will not take a job unless the company has moral and ethical standards similar to their own. So when you say look for companies that you'll be happy with and it'll be a good fit, that's what's going on out there today. Thank you all very much. Wow, what an insightful morning this has been, and we appreciate you being here. Appreciate everybody being here and asking the questions. And before we leave, I just want to make one announcement, and this is something we're really excited about. We're in the process right now, as you may have seen on your table, in planning the next Leaders and Innovators session on November the 15th. It's the third Thursday in November, as we always are. But this one is different because we will be presenting a crash course in financial planning. Now, we're not going to talk about stocks and bonds and what you should do and how you should invest. We will talk about how you put together the rest of your financial life. Information we believe that you will get here will probably be good for the next 40 or 50 years of your lives. We'll have an estate person here and a financial planning person here, and it'll be something unique. People usually pay a lot of money for this, but they will be here for free, as we always are at Leaders and Innovators. So spread that word around. We're excited about it. We're talking with these people right now, and we're getting this free crash course together, and everybody will be able to ask questions as well. There'll be plenty of time for that, and we get it all in an hour. Promise. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Excellent.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.